This is Mae Brussel, and it's side two of tape number 857, May the 9th, 1988. One of the advantages of just sharing these tapes with you, you subscribers, is that I can throw in certain personal things that happened or stories about Terry Moore. They're not on the air, and I can slip in. I guess you've noticed the language or the phrasing. It can be more informal, and I don't have to be so cautious, and I can put bits and pieces of experiences and people I've worked with that I haven't had on the air for obvious reasons. Now, this Major General Charles Willoughby not only was the chief of Douglas MacArthur's intelligence in the Pacific from 1941 on when Loyal Davis was with him, but he also in 1952 went to Spain and helped Franco, and then Dr. Urban and Errol Flynn connect there in Spain with Franco's army and the Nazis, betraying those Germans that went to go against Franco. And in Madrid, by 1950, the offices of Otto Skorzeny were set up that linked to our CIA. And then Miles Copeland of the CIA, who worked with Otto Skorzeny, is now managing George Bush's intelligence and can work right in if George Bush is president. And this element, this fascist element, has succeeded somewhat, very closely, in getting into power surreptitiously and hanging in there year after year, that they can influence our policies unless there is some other force that can counter what they are doing. And it took the brilliance of Winston Churchill to understand that maybe you needed astrologers to pick up what the forces are that would really ruin the Western world and put it in the hands of fascists. And Charles Willoughby, of course, says his name. He was the son of Freiherr T. von Scheppe und Wiedenbach. And I wrote about that in my article on the in Rebel on the Nazis and the JFK assassination. And those of you who don't have that article can write to me, and I'll tell you how to get it. I went into Willoughby and his links as a phalangist, as a fascist, working with Franco, getting millions of dollars for Franco. Franco called them tokens. When the war was over, the United States, in 1952, America gave him $100 million, Congress did, and that was simply called a token. And Charles Willoughby was very close to the powers of the Asian lobby and that group and the fascists around the world. He was also knighted, a Knight of Malta. Charles Willoughby was knighted by the Vatican and Mussolini. And he got the Sovereign Order of St. John of Jerusalem, the Knights of Malta, in 1967. He was among those very closely honored, and the officers of the Supreme Council of the Knights of Malta at that time, I have their names, are who's who of the very, very strong conservative elements that want to and wouldn't disappoint themselves if they put in a fascism. And luckily there are some people looking out for our interests. Now, just to run down the script of Nancy and Ronnie with the astrologer and with the stories that will be coming out, and a lot of it, of course, I haven't read Don Reagan's book, but I have discussed the Reagans with you over the years and with my very close friend who speaks Reaganese with me. And I just want to refresh your memory in terms of what I think happened, the script of the astrologers, and why these successful people were able to move in and influence Nancy and Ronald. First of all, Nancy was always in control of Ronald. It isn't that she just suddenly had guerrilla activities. She always was from the time she met him, from the time that Jane Wyman was divorced for what I know are political reasons, and when he married her in 1952, he not only called her mommy, but she always was in control. The arrangement for this switch, I believe, and have stated before, was a decision made by people in Hollywood, by the corporate structure such as General Electric and the Howard Hughes Organization, and Patrick Frawley, the man who created the idea that Ronald Reagan would be their man to take into Sacramento and then to Washington. Frawley, a Knight of Malta with William Buckley and Charles Willoughby, etc., that he would be their anti-communist leader, governor, then president, and I'm sure they had a few other backups in case this one got sick or didn't remember his lines. Third point is that Dr. Loyal Davis was very close to those elements in the Pacific, and that when his daughter went to Hollywood and was married by 1952, this wasn't a coincidental arrangement, and I don't think those things happened coincidentally. Now, Nancy says she went to Smith College. In the biography of her, she allegedly went to Smith College. As I look back at these years, in the years in California, I have never seen a photograph of her with a single Smith classmate. There were stories that she was there 4 years, but there's never mention of a friend that went to Smith or this graduate of Smith or a cabinet appointment or knew her at Smith. And that's very unusual at these small colleges. Her astrologer went to Vassar, but I heard that she was a roommate of William and James Buckley's sister. But it could be that Nancy, during this time interim, had those missing years where she was trained by the Defense Department, the intelligence community, to be the agent that she became. I don't believe that she was on that campus, and if they gave her a diploma, it was one of those sheepskins that was created for her. I would just love to see a lineup of former classmates or where she fit in to Smith College with her background. And given her parents and her education, it's very difficult to think that she did anything but learn image, the image of early America, the jelly beans, the balloons, the flags, and has a strong, strong arm. So I would venture to say, if we looked a little harder than I mentioned it before, that she was a trained agent. Now, Ronnie was sent to mind control clinics. I've mentioned those. He learned politics. He learned how to avoid questions. He learned how to forget. He learned how to show America with flags waving. And as I say, everything looks like a big candy store at Disneyland with the jelly beans and infantile image and lots of red, white, and blue. When Ronnie moved into Washington, he came with a flurry. They tried to kick the Carters out in advance. They brought their hairdresser, the decorator, the florist. Again, all the images. And then the inaugural ball was put on, hosted by Frank Sinatra, the mafia kingpin. And then Ronnie, in office, ordained, you know, crowned our new emperor and imperial president, could go about undoing every single thing that touched social progress from the time of Franklin Roosevelt. He said he wanted to go back to the period of Herbert Hoover, and of course Herbert Hoover and Ida Koverman and Louis Mayer, as I said, were very close, and he wanted to turn the clock back that far back. And in order to assure this presidency that this king could get his crown, he had to take former CIA Director George Bush as his running mate. And at that point, when he was inaugurated, January the 20th in 81, Reagan was ready at the first NSC meeting to go after Khomeini in Iran, Gaddafi in Libya, to overthrow Nicaragua, to put prayer in the school, to do away with the legalized abortion, and to prepare for Armageddon. Those religious prophecies were drummed into him by the religious right and Jerry Falwell, and up till 1984, it was told to him over and over again. Now, the Reagans don't read the Bible, they don't go to church. But this was fed as a necessity against the evil empire, and he was also fed material by Edward Teller of Western Goals and Helionetics about the Star Wars and the necessity for his first strike against the evil empire. And the stage was all set for hell to break out. Now, what happened to the Reagans at that point? Reagan was no sooner inaugurated in 1981, January 81, than CIA Director Bush was fighting his turf with General Alexander Haig. By March of 81, the cover of Life magazine, Time magazine, read has a picture of Haig, the Vicar of Washington. They were fighting for domestic control if and when we go to war, using that federal emergency management. And by March 81, they'd been in office 2 months. The first open fight of the newly elected president with his team was in the news. It was Haig versus Bush, and of course Haig fought in Korea and Vietnam and was trained in the Philippines, and he belonged to that West Coast clique, and Bush belonged to the East Coast Trilateral Rockefeller Gang, and they were at each other's throats. Well, by March the 30th, with those guys fighting, and particularly the 2 weeks before the bullets went off, Reagan was shot and almost killed, and this is when the astrologer became an absolute necessity. Although they used one in California, or used them a lot. In fact, the story about the swearing in when he became governor is coming out now. Most people who speak Reaganese, we know that he put off the ceremony by 8 minutes. But there's nothing wrong with that, because if he did it, it worked. He went on to be president, so everyone should use an astrologer and take their oath at midnight if that's what it takes to get it. So the fact that an astrologer hurt him in any way is ridiculous, because he was able to keep quiet all his various scandals in California as they mounted and go on to be president. So in some way, he was reassured of his positive personality, and that astrologer didn't hurt him one bit. But as soon as Reagan was shot and almost killed, any ninny could read a newspaper and figure out the people behind it. I have one full filing drawer, 26 inches, and I'm not the Reagans. Remember when Reagan woke up and said, give me the demographic description of my assailant, and I did a broadcast on it? Well, the links of the Hinckley family to George Bush, of George Bush to John Connally, and that factor of Dallas, the Texas people that killed John Kennedy, would be apparent to anybody who reads their newspapers, and Nancy isn't dumb. So after all these years of grooming him and getting him into and inaugurated as president, within 2 months they were trying to kill him. And she needed an astrologer for advice. She withdrew from these people and for all purposes began even to be, questionable about the environment around her. And also John Hinckley Jr. was associated with the Posse Comitatus, the Reverend Gale groups, and with Nazis in Texas, Illinois, etc. So being on the Rockefeller Commission that investigated Kennedy's murder and being close to those people that were behind the murder of John Kennedy when he was governor, Reagan was duplicating it with Texas Vice President George Bush, just as John Kennedy had Texas Vice President Lyndon Johnson. And 2 months after the shooting of the president, the Pope was shot. And again, the pieces of the puzzle were in almost every newspaper if you read, and I'm sure people were discussing it. And elements of the Pope shooting involved Licio Gelli, who had attended Reagan's inauguration, and there was Frank Turpel saying how he trained Ajah, and Theodore Shackley in Rome, and Francesco Pazienza of Italian intelligence visiting Alexander Haig just weeks before they were to, the inauguration would take place, and Haig became Secretary of State, working with Michael Ledeen. So the Reagans literally became surrounded by the very people that they thought they would be controlling, and they became more and more isolated. And as bad as the Reagans are, selfish, self-centered, blind to everybody else, they themselves were getting this treatment. And his only victory in his whole campaign of presidency, the whole period, was taking that poor little island of Grenada and killing Maurice Bishop, and he had no other accomplishments. Now, according to this book of Don Reagan, Ronald Reagan was angry at the information, and he said, imagine it coming out on Mother's Day. And the White House had a statement, vindictiveness and revenge are not admirable qualities and are not worthy of comment. Don Reagan's attempts to defame the First Lady on Mother's Day, no less, are certainly in this category. Well, it may have been Mother's Day, but where are the children? They went to Camp David on Friday. They came home on Sunday. Three married children, two grandchildren. I didn't see one with them, and there was no report, just as the holidays come around, that they ever spare any time with them. So the effrontery on Mother's Day isn't the book coming out that time, Don Reagan's book, or the articles. It's that they really have no family, that they had put themselves into a box in order to have the power they had. They played every price. It's like Mephisto, the movie, or the story of Mephistopheles, and they traded their souls for this position, for this power. And then when they got it, the bullets started flying. And in total confusion, they had to use and relied upon the astrologer. Don Reagan says, the quotation from the newspaper, the former chief of staff say he regarded Mrs. Reagan's interest in astrology as a harmless eccentricity at first, but it wasn't until it impinged, in my judgment, to harm the president in the latter part of 86 and 87. Now, that's the key. How did it harm the president in 1986 or 87? That's before the Iran-Contra scandal. What harmed the president in 86 and 87 is that Reagan began to turn away from that far-right rhetoric. Remember the KAL incident in 1983? By 86 and 87, he was losing that fascist agenda. It was slowing down. They were being moderated. And Reagan and Nancy began their activities, say no to drugs. At the same time, the newspapers were filled with Don Reagan's company, Merrill Lynch, being involved in heroin profits from New York going to Swiss banks. They got messy. They got into the drugs. She began to take on a cause. The cause could pinch some shoes. And Don Reagan realized that the Reagans were moving into his turf, and what affected his judgment and harmed the presidency was the fact that they were taking on a cause now, and maybe getting even, taking on a cause that would touch these very people. Remember, it was Ronald Reagan who appointed Judge Kaufman to have a crime commission, and the crime commission named Don Reagan's company and also E.F. Hutton, the chairman of which was Scott Pierce, until recently the brother-in-law of George Bush, Barbara Bush's brother. So the president and Nancy maybe had this commission appointed that did investigate and identify those companies, E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch, as drug connections, and they were maybe sitting at Camp Davis and toning down some of the rhetoric as time went on, and also leaking, and they have their own friends and inner circle, and had Judge Kaufman do a job and a report that's there for everybody to see. I've quoted it many times, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, and these articles tell about money going to Mr. Waradol that funded the man who shot the Pope, and those or institutions are now getting slaps on the wrist for drug investments and transfer of money, not that they should. But the Reagans isolated these people and went into seclusion. Don Reagan describes Mrs. Reagan as presiding over a shadowy distaff presidency and using adroit guerrilla actions to achieve goals in a genuine belief that she was the best judge of her husband's interests. Now, she was the best judge of her husband's interest in getting rid of Don Reagan. And as I say, if I can figure these things out in California, just sitting here under an oak tree, I imagine that a very bright, astute woman knows much, much more. You can know that. She knows more than me. And what were her guerrilla actions? What would the astrologer tell Nancy that would be a guerrilla action or a change in the presidency in 86 and 87, when Nancy knew he was going nowhere fast and she wanted him remembered in history? There was also another shocking thing that happened to the Reagans in this time period, and that was the fact of the exposure of their friends, the Bloomingdales. You remember that story? I'll get to that in one moment. Just a few more quotes of Don Reagan, because she knew the presidency needed something to be remembered by. She wanted him to have a place in history, and I referred to that statue of him at Mount Rushmore she wanted. And all of a sudden, after the incidences in the Soviet Union with the explosion there at Chernobyl, the Rekovich Conference, the meeting summit was set up, and now Ronald Reagan, the man who hated the evil empire, has had one meeting with Gorbachev in Geneva, another meeting in Washington. Now he's going to Moscow next month, and he's going to have a fourth meeting with the evil empire. And he toned down his rhetoric. Gorbachev said last week, "I don't like what you're saying." And Reagan said, "Oh, I'm sorry, Gorby. You're really a nice guy." And he apologized and praised Gorby. And the far right is going bananas. If you watch Novak on Crossfire, the Sunday programs, Robert Novak, if you watch Buchanan, Thomas Buchanan, they say the right agenda is gone, and that poor Mr. Fine, that little mousy guy from Heritage Foundation, is trying to save the right agenda. They advised him, they told him, but I believe that Nancy was angry. She was angry he was shot. She was angry that these people have been deceiving them, and she's angry and needs these people that will tone down and advise, and maybe the advisors, these astrologers, were doing to her, giving her information that would keep Ronnie from being the warmonger. We've lost the Armageddon idea, the World War III idea. He was ripe with that if you look up the early speeches. And all of a sudden, the Reagans had colon cancer. He had two operations. Nancy had a breast cancer. And they became more and more dependent upon astrologers. And I can't see any indication that they did any harm for them in any shape or form. Their friends in California bought them a house, 17 people at 666 St. Cloud Road, and it was called Satan's House, and they changed the number. People try to do things or link them to certain associations, I suppose, but they are fighting for their turf, and these people have given them probably the only comfort they can get. Nancy's closest friend, Betsy Bloomingdale, is hardly around her anymore. Now, the Don Reagan story says that Mrs. Reagan's influence hardly stopped at lesser matters such as scheduling trips or speeches. Reagan said, in his account, she was the one who decreed that Vice President George Bush and National Security Advisor Robert McFarlane be barred from Reagan's hospital bed for days following his cancer surgery. Now, what is Don Reagan's beef? If she wants them barred, she wants them barred. There's no law that says the former CIA director has to come into the room and see her husband. As I say before, George Bush is a symbol. If you know the Hinckley, Connolly, Bush connections, she didn't want him around. He's the heir to their turf, to their throne, and for obvious reasons she didn't want it. And Robert McFarlane, you all know, he was an aide to Alexander Haig and worked on the National Security Council as advisor with Fritz Kramer and Sven Kramer. And Nancy's instincts and guts, maybe she just couldn't say it herself. Maybe she needed the astrologer to tell her or to help her keep those people away from him. And personally, that's none of Don Reagan's business. It's more of his business to find out why he took suitcases with millions of dollars from the Waldorf Astoria to his very agency and then sent them to drug dealers to pay for drugs that have zonked out the people of New York, Manhattan, and all around New York. It really isn't his business if she doesn't want Bush in the room or McFarlane in the room. And as I say, her dependence upon these people, which began long ago, could have a very good effect. Now, as I say, Nancy isn't dumb, and she has astrologers in California, and it worked, time of the inauguration. In 1982, 1 year after Ronnie was shot and the Pope was shot, Alfred Bloomingdale, their long friend, was dying of cancer. Bloomingdale had been appointed to the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, that secret group, along with the late Roy Cohn, who died of AIDS and mental derangement. And before he died, Vicky Morgan, the mistress of Alfred Bloomingdale, was cut off of funds because Betsy found out he had been supporting her for the past 12 years. Now, do you think it's coincidence that just last week on television there was a 30-minute segment about Vicky Morgan, and even Edwin Meese was named again, and Marvin Mitchelson, the attorney, said there are indeed tapes of kinky sex in Washington, and it involves sadomasochism and whips and people tied up and defecating and urinating on each other, as I read in the stories. That wasn't on the TV. And they confirmed, yes, indeed, there are tapes, and that Marvin Pancoast, who says he did it, that he killed Vicky with the baseball bat, is lying, that he has volunteered to say that he caused other problems. He's a great confessor under mind control. Now, most people don't talk about mind control in those terms, but his attorney and Mitchelson said the tapes exist and that Vicky was murdered so that it would protect people in the administration. Two cabinet appointees and one that was put in by Ronald Reagan, two regular cabinet people and one other. And even the name Meese came in. This was on television last week. Pancoast is dying of AIDS. And then on this same program, it comes on twice a day in California, about 7 in the evening and then at midnight. And it's about unsolved crimes. And this segment was on Vicky Morgan. And the attorneys, no less, not just Mae Brussels, talking about conspiracy, were saying that people in high places had Vicky Morgan killed and that these tapes exist. So why is this story breaking just at this time? I think that there's a lot of vengeance going back and forth. And if these people are going to do these kiss-and-tell books, more will leak out. And, boy, are we going to have a good time. Now, with the pressures on them in Washington, as I say, with President shot, the Pope shot, and then the scandal of their very, very closest friends, they went into seclusion, and the Reagans led the most abnormal life that I mentioned before of any possible couple in America. They leave on Friday and go to Camp David. They come home on Sunday, and the White House is only for official dinners. The family stays away, and according to these stories, Mrs. Reagan chatted with her astrologer every Saturday from Camp David. And the advice the soothsayer gave, coupled with concern by Nancy for the health of her husband, was excessive and, according to Don Reagan, caused particular problems when the Iran-Contra scandal broke and his prostate surgery came down. Now, no astrologer caused problems for them. The problems came when Mr. Eugene Hasenfuss landed in Nicaragua and when a newspaper in Lebanon published the fact that Ronald Reagan and his staff, you can see Ollie North and you can see Poindexter and McFarlane, who personally went to Iran, and Michael Ledeen and agents of the Mossad doing things that were not in the best interest of the president, and as Poindexter said, doing things he thought the president wanted, and Larry Speaks saying the things he thought the president should say, and they're sitting out at Camp David with the astrologers. Well, let's add up what the astrologers could or couldn't do if this is all true, that they sought advice, because making a speech on one day as against another is really nobody's business, and it's the same canned speech and is written on a little 3x5 card. So what is Don Reagan's beef? I know his beef was the crime commission. Reagan went into office. He was going to kill Khomeini. It didn't work. Khomeini's still in power. We didn't get a foothold in Iran. He came close to, he didn't kill Gaddafi. Gaddafi's stronger than Ronald Reagan today. He never balanced the budget. He promised to do that when he ran for office. Abortions are still legal. That wasn't overturned. And according to Don Reagan's book, there was a speech that where Ronnie was referring to abortions, and she had him delete it. She took out the part about not allowing abortions. So in that way, we're all given a service. If you don't want to be knocked up by somebody that, or have a baby you don't want, she took that out of the speech. Reagan didn't go to bat for Judge Bork. Bork was furious that the White House didn't fight for him. We didn't invade Nicaragua, which was a fait accompli after the invasion of Grenada, his only great achievement. Fidel Castro is still alive and living in Cuba with him now, or Frank Churchill and Robert Vesco. Eugene Hasenfuss fell from the sky in Nicaragua, and that broke open the scandals of the administration and the defiance of the Boland Amendment, and they were in fact arming the Contras. The Lebanese government broke the story about the arms for Iran, as I mentioned before, which matched the image of Reagan that he would never trade arms for hostages. So the astrologers did some good, and the other things they didn't do, I don't see what influence they had, except overall it sort of castrated the policies that the Reagans had when they went in for. Their very closest advisors from early days, Lynn Nofziger from California and Michael Deaver, their, in quote, son, have both been convicted of crimes. The former chief of staff, their children are writing books. The evil empire rhetoric has been slowed down. As I say, we're going to have a fourth summit and a meeting with Gorbachev. And Reagan's religious right that put him into office and went really as a holy terror until 1984 was pushed out, and the Falwells were pushed out. Reagan never went to church. He abandoned them, and telephonically they'd be in touch with their soothsayer, throwing out the religious right. Don Reagan of Merrill Lynch was chairman of Merrill Lynch formerly as chief of staff, one of the most arrogant, horrible people, literally ran the country, was forced out of office. He's furious, and so he takes something like the astrologer to get even at the Reagans. He has more to talk about than they have consulting astrology. And then John Conley, a man who moved to Washington formerly on the board of Permandex, a group that arranged the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, lost every cent he had this year and went into total bankruptcy. So what did the astrologers, how did they hurt that administration that we viewed from our point of view? It definitely was toned down. Reagan lost that angry rhetoric. And maybe, and I just say maybe, we were definitely headed towards World War III. And maybe those astrologers from Hollywood, Mr. Ryder and Reagan's friend in San Francisco and the other ones, were able to stop what they saw was happening. Because what I saw was happening, and many of you saw, was how are we going to stop this mad dog? We were on the edge of the federal emergency management taking over this country, of a Reichstag crisis coming and influencing us and rounding people up. He could have created all kinds of situations. So I personally believe that the astrology movement of people very high up in this ilk, and it's been historically documented, were involved in politics for purposes. And I believe that the people around the Reagans toned them down when all things were bad. And maybe we should say thank you to the astrologers, the very ones from British intelligence who came to Hollywood, the ones that were assigned to disinform Hitler, that worked together, were certainly in touch with Ronald Reagan and Nancy. And maybe the calming period before the next administration is something that we needed. The highs were going for 4 years and then slowing down, and what Don Reagan misses is that high of accusing and fighting is good for Wall Street, war is good for Wall Street, and to say these people were a disaster for for Ronald and Nancy means they were a disaster for the far right, religious, fascist right, the ones we have to watch when George Bush is president. Then our troubles begin. I wish Bush had an astrologer also. So the time is up. I'll be back with you next week to do some more on Inslaw, but this is a very important political element, and it touches the Reagans and us in ways that are very subtle, but very, very important. This is May, and I'll be back with you next week to continue with some more of these stories about Ronnie and Nancy.